From WGCU, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. A major expansion of Florida's medical marijuana program goes into effect tomorrow. Amendment 2 greatly expands what illnesses a doctor can recommend cannabis for, and it sets into motion new laws. But Florida's medical marijuana laws are still being written. As Florida lawmakers grapple with how to implement Amendment 2, local policymakers are putting in place rules of their own. Coming up, we talk with a doctor with a new clinic in Venice focused on medical cannabis. And we'll talk with a local council member who voted to wait a year before allowing permits for dispensaries in the village of Estero. Plus, they have captivated the world, two expectant parents in a nest far above North Fort Myers. We're talking about the Eagles, Harriet, and her mate, M15, who have doted on their two eggs since November. One hatched over the weekend. We'll talk with the people who set up that camera, and we'll talk with a wildlife rehabilitation expert about what we're learning from this bird's eye view. But first, the news. This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. The world watches and waits along with two expectant eagles waiting for the second of two eggs to hatch. The first eaglet was born on Saturday. We'll get a status report on egg number two and a little insight into the eagle domestic life a little later in the show. But first, 71% of Florida voters said yes to expanding Florida's medical marijuana system when they voted for Amendment 2 in November. The resolution greatly expands the kind of illnesses doctors can treat with medical cannabis, but much of the new laws are yet to be written. Lawmakers in Tallahassee and the State Department of Health have 6 months to draft the final rules, but from Boca Raton to Sarasota to Estero, local officials are taking the rules into their own hands and passing laws that limit or even prohibit some aspects of Florida's medical marijuana business from moving forward. Joining us live in the studio to talk about what Florida's new medical cannabis laws mean for patients is Dr. Barry Gordon. He's the physician at the Compassionate Cannabis Clinic in Venice. It's a practice focused on connecting patients with medical cannabis, and he'll be seeing his first patients tomorrow morning. Dr. Gordon, welcome.
Thank you, Julie.
Also joining us today is Katie Arrington, representing District 4 of the Estero Village Council. She was the council person who initiated Estero's one-year moratorium against opening any medical marijuana distribution businesses in the village. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you, Julie.
We're talking about Florida's expanded medical marijuana laws that are going into effect tomorrow. What are your thoughts, and what concerns do you have as the state drafts its cannabis laws? Share your thoughts at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU, using the hashtag GCL. Dr. Barry, before we dive into what Amendment 2 means for you and your clinic in Venice, tell me about the medical marijuana laws that are in effect in Florida right now today.
Right. Well, you know, thanks for having me, Julie. I appreciate it. Because, you know, there are so many questions about what's going on with the constitutional Amendment 2 passing back in November. A couple years ago, when the original amendment did not pass, it was needed a supermajority of 60%. It had 58 and a percentage a couple years ago. The governor at that time put his own program into place after it didn't pass, just from the compassionate use side. So they established an Office of Compassionate Use at the Department of Health level, and they put some guidelines into place. At this point, you can get a low THC type of cannabis if you are terminally ill. And you not only need to be terminally ill, you need to be dying within the year, and two doctors need to attest that you're dying within the year. So it was very, very strict. There was also a CBD product that is the non-THC component that has been found to be very helpful for spastic diseases of multiple sclerosis and things of that nature. So there was a second category for those type of patients. So the point is there's been a program under the Division of Compassionate Use, but it's been limited, and there's been, you know, some degree of access for patients, but not a whole lot. So not a whole lot of patients have signed up for it.
So tomorrow, Amendment 2 goes into effect. How is that going to be different from right now?
Right. What constitutional amendment did, and, you know, once again, it was passed by 71% of the population of Florida, you know, fully 6 million voters. You know, President-elect Trump himself only had 4 million million voters. So it was a really strong mandate by the citizens of Florida. What it did was a few things. The first thing was is that it opened up a entirely new set of conditions for patients to qualify under, including such things as Crohn's disease, multiple sclerosis, post-traumatic stress disorder. There's about eight of them. The second thing that it did was that it laid out a set of guidelines to the extent of patients establishing a 90-day relationship with a provider such as myself, for example, needing a 90-day continuing relationship with the provider, and a series of other guidelines that the legislators can use when they begin to put together their program, the legislative session beginning in March.
So how does it work? If somebody, they have to start going to a doctor such as yourself, it can't be your regular general practitioner?
Well, actually, it can be your general practitioner. And, you know, it's been interesting the response that we've had to our clinic. The only difference that we really have to the extent of our practice being a little bit different than other primary care physicians is that we came out with the practice focus being upon medicinal cannabis. On the other hand, any licensed physician in the state of Florida can take the compassionate use provider course. And I'll be honest with you, I'm shocked that more providers haven't taken it, because I think there are patients in every practice that will ask questions and will quite frankly want their primary care provider to be a member of the program. On the other hand, there's restrictions perhaps from the hospital systems that they work for, insurance companies that pay them. One of the unique things about my practice was that I'm independent. I have a laser tattoo removal practice at this point after a 32-year emergency medicine career in Ohio. And, you know, I was in a semi-retirement mode when the constitutional amendment passed. My 32-year past emergency medicine career and my experience in the research of medical cannabis just dictated to me that I begin to carry the ball strongly forward, not just for patient care, but also for the education of the patients in Florida and to advocate for the appropriate implementation of the legislation as we go along. So in our clinic, we have that threefold focus. One is patient care, but two is education. And the advocacy that I know we're going to need here in Florida, because there's still some things that are standing in the way.
And there's still a lot of questions, too. And you said that people have to wait 90 days, or they have to have a 90-day relationship with a given doctor?
You do. You need to have that 90-day relationship. You know, and it's easy for me in many ways to speak to the program of its excellence. Florida, I think, did a fantastic job at putting together a medicinal-based program where you do need that 90-day relationship with a provider. You do need to have 90-day follow-up visits. Each case that's referred also goes to the Florida College of Pharmacy, the University of Florida College of Pharmacy, for research and study. So it's really a program that is based upon the medicinal uses of cannabis. And, you know, quite frankly, I think as opposed to some other programs that weren't quite as well put together.
Well, this is also going to be different, too, because it's not like you're just going to go down to CVS or Walgreens and pick it up. And you say you don't ever call it a prescription. You're calling it a recommendation. Why is there that difference?
Well, you know, we have to know, of course, that the federal government still has all cannabis products classified as Schedule 1 under the DEA mandates. Schedule 1 means that there's been no medical positivity shown to the product and no further research could or should be done. This has been really a demonization of cannabis for 80-some years at this point, going all the way back to the 1940s. Actually, the class that I, as a provider, was required to take goes all the way back to describe how we've come to the point where we're at today. We're in the 1940s. The cannabis products were actually taken away from medical providers, with the opiates being the class of medicines that were kept. There were a lot of corruption type of issues at that time. But the point of the matter is that 80 years later, we're forced into a circumstance where we still see patients dying of opioid overdoses every day, not, of course, just in Florida, but in every state in the country. So I feel like I'm carrying the ball forward for those physicians from back in the 1940s that knew that what was going on was wrong with the focus on the opioids and the taking away of the cannabinoids. It was just very interesting to read the course.
Yes, interesting, the history and the backstory behind it. We have a phone call coming in from Jesse in Fort Myers. Jesse, what would you like to ask?
Hi, thank you for having me. My question is for the doctor mostly. I'm concerned when it comes to suggesting medical marijuana with psychological issues like depression, anxiety. In other states, we've seen that recommended for those, but the APA has said that it's detrimental and not beneficial to those patients. So I was wondering what the doctor thought on that issue and how it should be drafted in legislation.
Well, you know, the answer would be that there's been tons of research done, but unfortunately not here in the United States because we've been suppressed to the extent of what was allowed under the federal regulations. So most of the research, quite frankly, has been done in other countries, but there's been a fantastic body of research. What I found is that since we announced our clinics opening, the patients that are looking to come into the practice are patients that typically are attempting to decrease the amount of medicines that that they're taking otherwise. If they're on a benzodiazepine, for example, for anxiety or depression, they may want to take less of that. Patients that may be in some degree of a pain management program may want to reduce the amount of opiate medicines that they're taking. So, you know, I think the interesting thing is that the good news about cannabis is that there's so few drug-drug interactions and dangerous side effects. If there's positives for patients, that'll be just a fantastic thing. But I believe that there will be very few negatives to that extent. My philosophy also is to work along with your primary care physician or your psychiatric physician to the extent of augmenting the care that you're getting through your primary care or other doctors. We surely don't want to supplant anybody's excellent care that they're getting elsewhere. And that's why my philosophy is, if quite frankly, there's a physician within the practice that you have that already has a compassionate use provider licensure, absolutely reasonable to stay within that practice and stay within the physician, you know, care that you have.
Can I ask you a little about the cannabis that you're talking about? The cannabis that I am familiar with is movies. Okay, so you just see people that are profoundly psychologically affected by it. The kind of cannabis that you're talking about for medical things, does it still make people really high, or does it affect, you know, neurologically? Are there ways to ingest what you're saying is good for illnesses without having the side effect of?
Right. I mean, there's two main components to the cannabis. THC, of course, is the one that has the psychoactive components. And, you know, Julie, I think to a certain extent, there's been a demonization going all the way back to the days of the Reefer Madness, you know, movie and things of that nature. I think most
people.
Well,
it also would be inconvenient, too, if you're just trying to make yourself feel better, but then you're sitting there, you know.
Right.
Looking for Cheetos and spaced out. And
the point is that you could separate out the THC from the CBDs or the cannabidiols, which are felt to have the effect on spastic issues, anti-seizure
like
effect, anti-inflammatory effects. And, you know, quite frankly, there's a number of compounds still within the cannabis plant, I think, that haven't been appropriately studied. There's things called the terpenes and otherwise. Really interesting within the body of the course that providers are required to take. There's actually something called the entourage effect, which means that the combination of all the products within the plant somehow have a more positive benefit than the separation out of the products and giving them separately. And no one's quite sure why that is, and the research will go as we go.
I've read a lot about that in, like, nutrition
right.
and stuff, too.
Right. But the bottom line is that you can absolutely separate the CBD components from the THC components so that if people do not want to have the psychoactive effects, then you can avoid them.
That would, yeah. Okay, well, tomorrow, Florida expands its medical marijuana laws, and we want to know what it means for you. What concerns do you have going forward? Call in and share with us your thoughts at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, Twitter at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. Now, I want to get to some of the concerns of this being such a new thing, and that's why Katie Arrington with the Estero Village Council is here with us. You drafted the one-year moratorium on businesses dispensing cannabis back in November. This put the ban in place almost before Amendment 2 even passed. What concerns about Amendment 2 led you to draft this ban?
First, let me describe the village of Estero. We have Estero is located between Fort Myers and Naples, and we are a very young little community, municipality. We vary in population from 20,000 to 40,000. And we became a municipality 2 years ago with an approval rating, and the voters gave us 86% wanting to become a municipality. So now that we are incorporated, everything that we are doing is from – we're building a foundation. And we are doing everything from the ground up, with including interlocal agreements. Everything is building a new government. So when it was heard that newspaper ads had indicated that there were ads for people wanting to become entrepreneurs in case Amendment 2 passed, would they like to learn how to become an entrepreneur to sell cannabis. And so that's what prompted the beginning of this ordinance. We could have gone in four different ways with the ordinance, and we chose the moratorium. Now, the moratorium, I think it's because of the lead space sometimes. Ban is an easier word to use, but moratorium is more appropriate. Moratorium means that we have up to 9 months to a year to decide what to do. This is all so very, very new. It's so different from what passed in 2014 and 2012. This has been 2 years, and it took 2 years and 3 years of contemplation and $11 million, excuse me, to get this bill passed. And so we want to make sure that we are on the right track of doing the right thing for the residents of Estero. And we haven't heard from enough people in Estero with what they want. And I would think once the Department of Health and the Florida legislature decides the direction that we will be going in, that we will have to get public support to do whatever is needed. Now, we could have chosen from the moratorium type of ordinance. We could have gone with the zoning and numerical and regulation. And we decided to go with one, just putting a stop on it just for months, several months, to decide what we need to do. This is so new. There are approximately six or seven dispensaries. I understand there are six dispensaries. A seventh one came in to place just recently.
Where?
In the state.
Oh, throughout the state?
Throughout the state. And they're the ones governing everything that's happening right now.
The dispensaries that already exist?
Yes. And so this will change. This will change. And so we don't know who can grow it, where it can be grown, where it can be stored, where it can be housed. It's still federally, it's illegal. And where do you put, it's all cash basis, so where do you put the money? I mean, these are big issues for a small government to
be
taking.
What's all cash? It's all cash? What do you mean? What does that mean?
Well, the federal government, because it's a Schedule I, still hasn't really recognized exactly where the money in Colorado, for example, how it should be appropriately put into banks and things of that nature. So, you know, Ms. Arrington is exactly correct. And I'll be honest with you, to the extent of feeling it's reasonably appropriate for folks like her to really be keeping an eye on things. My point is that that's exactly what we're doing in our clinic. We want to do things not just 100% by the rules, but 1,000% by the rules.
Well, the rules haven't been written yet.
Exactly.
That's right.
That's right. So I think activism is important, you know, both from the focus of folks like Ms. Arrington and for, you know, folks like myself as well. My point is that we want to advocate for access and the reliability, quite frankly, of law enforcement to be able to protect, you know, the citizens of Florida. So there's a balance.
47 municipalities have written ordinances.
That want to wait. They want to wait.
They want to do something. They either have zoning or some type of ordinance in place.
Well, it's
and
kind
we just
it
happen to be
like
one of them. And it's just a matter – I think it's very prudent of us to even think about waiting. What happens tomorrow if someone comes in and wants something, you know?
And then they have, you know, mm-hmm. grounds to say, well, you wouldn't let me and you don't have anything on the books saying that I can't.
We only have this ordinance that just says we can't do anything for 9 months to a year.
And the reason you're waiting is because Florida still has 6 months to put together their laws. And then after that, they'll have another 3 months to implement those laws, right?
It's my understanding that they should have something on the books by June 3rd, and then they should, I guess, issue ID cards by September the 3rd.
Has anybody come to you asking about putting in a dispensary or any kind of clinic?
Yes.
You have had inquiries?
We have, yes.
A lot of inquiries or one
not
or two?
One.
One?
One.
Okay. And they know then that you're going to just be waiting and seeing?
Yes.
So that's been the answer. So
yes.
You have your law
yes.
on the books in order to do that?
Yes.
Okay. We have a caller on the line. We have Stokely from Matt Lachey who is calling in with a question. Stokely?
Yes, ma'am. And I may have missed this, but for those of us who had severe pain, will marijuana be available to replace the opioids, and would the patient be allowed to grow it?
Yeah, you know, Stokely, I'm glad you answered asked that question, because it's very important to make a distinction to the extent of the treatment of pain, especially in Florida. You know, Florida had a significant issue, I guess, 5 or 6 years ago. I was still up in Ohio at that point, but I know that they had a significant issue with the pain clinics in the state. And at that point, they made some significant changes in the wording and the zonings and things of that nature. At this point, very importantly to know that if you're going to advertise as a pain management clinic, you need to have a specific set of providers and licensure. So it's not the goal of our clinic to hold ourselves out as a pain management clinic, very importantly so. Also, within the 8 qualifying conditions for the state right now, pain also is not mentioned as one of those 8 qualifying conditions. So that's something that we're going to have to keep an eye on as well. Now, there's no doubt that most of the patients, of course, that have chronic pain have other ongoing medical issues as well, some anxiety and depression connected with them, some degree of sleep disorder. You know, so it'll be interesting to see how the laws are written ultimately. But the important thing about what the laws are written as per now, the intention is to allow other conditions that are similar to those stated amongst the 8 qualifying conditions.
What are they? Do you know the 8 qualifying conditions off the top of your head?
Well, I do. I mean, there's Crohn's disease and multiple sclerosis, HIV, AIDS, cancer. I should have them, you know, right in front of me. But
oh, no.
Yeah, but they're all there, and they're quite frankly right on our website and on every site that you looked at for the Office of Compassionate Use. But once again, the key is the tag phrase at the end. And it's important because of – and I know you asked this question in the pre show. To the extent of how am I going to know, Julie, that patients aren't coming to me just to get a card to go out and recreationally use marijuana?
Well, I think that would be one – if you're going in for psychological post-traumatic stress, I mean that's something that you don't see on an X-ray. Do you see what I'm saying?
Well, that's right. Well, of course, patients can bring medical records from their physicians, you know, of course, and there are other providers. I think the state of Florida allows me to believe my patients. But I think that points out the importance of the 90-day relationship, right? I mean, patients have to go through a lot of hoops in order to come and see me. Tons of paperwork, right? They got to establish the 90-day relationship. Our first visit is a full half hour with a full physical examination and a full review of the history, medications, things of that nature. And then quite frankly, patients commit to coming back to seeing me in 90 days so we can discuss. And you know, it's an interesting thing because, you know, I'm an emergency medicine expert and specialist by training. There are specialists in cannabis that have written doctorates, dissertations, that have spent their entire life researching cannabis use medicinally and otherwise, right? My point is I'm going to offer to my patients those 90 days of education. Go read about your condition and what cannabis can do for you. I'm going to be doing the exact same thing. I'm a student again. So my point is that 90-day period of time is extremely important, I think, to guarantee that people are just not going to be coming to me for recreational use. I think, you know, and this is not a knock against law enforcement. I love my law enforcement guys, and I want to give them a huge shout out. They all just worked on the holidays, and, you know, I'm not an ER doctor anymore. I had them off. But, you know, the law enforcement community, I think, pretty well recognizes that they can't arrest their way out of surely the cannabis problem in the state. So I think most law enforcement, quite frankly, is fairly favorable towards the new laws because it allows law-abiding citizens to continue to be law-abiding citizens. They just want to participate in a medicinal program that's different than what they've had offered to them in the past.
One question that she asked in the phone call from Matt Lachey, she said, can people, if they are using this or if they are prescribed this, are they going to be able to grow it themselves?
Right. Right now in the legislation, that surely is not there. There are other states that do allow that. Michigan, for example, you can grow your own 5 plants and then you can give them to a processor to distill them down into the various oils and edibles and things like that. But to the best of my knowledge, Florida does not have that contained right now within the program.
No, I haven't. No.
Right.
Yeah, and we're probably – nobody's going to permit for that in Estero, I'm guessing, anytime soon. So you're telling me – I wanted to get back with Katie. You were telling me about Estero being a young town, a young village. And it's a new law, and you want to just wait and see and make sure all the ducks are in place before you decide to start handing permits out?
Yes, absolutely.
Do you see that happening in the future down the road?
I don't know. I can't foresee the future. So we have a 7-member council. We have a very light staff. You know that our government is government light, and we have a village manager and six full-time staff people. So we can't put extra burdens on people without raising our taxes and doing things that will create a problem within our budget. We are just taking the stand to wait and see what the rules and regulations are coming from Tallahassee and from the especially from the Department of Health. They're the ones that's written into Amendment 2. They will write the standards, and then the state legislatures will have to go along with that, or there will be a lot of a debate on what's going to happen. And then, you know, it will come down to the local governments. What can we do? And that's where we're waiting to see.
The other angle on this, though, is also market research company called New Frontier Data. It reports that Florida's medical cannabis market could be as big as $1.6 billion by 2020. And that's going to make it the third largest market for medical cannabis in the country. So you're going to have people that are going to want to get in on that entrepreneurship angle.
Yes.
But what does that mean, do you know yet, as far as local tax collecting on that?
Well, that's an interesting subject, because how do you collect taxes if the money can't go into the bank? See, it can't be deposited into the bank. Health insurance does not cover this.
No, but there's been significant tax revenue positives in, you know, the states that have gone
both
medicinal
and statewide, or would it be the local?
No, well, it still has to be. It has to be figured out.
Yep.
So this stuff hasn't been written out yet?
No.
We have 6 months to wait for Florida to let us
know. Decide what happens.
And once again, just from the advocacy side, I mean, that's where my practice becomes important, because once again, we want to try to make it as accessible to the patients as we can, avoid significant taxation. The dosing is very important. Physicians should be controlling the dosing, not politicians, and that shouldn't be legislated. So there's issues like that, quite frankly, is one of the reasons why I took the approach that I did, so that I can have a body of patients that are counting on me to lobby appropriately for them as an advocate for them in Tallahassee and elsewhere.
Well, we are going to have to leave it there today. I'd like to thank both of my guests, Dr. Barry Gordon with the Compassionate Cannabis Clinic in Venice, and also Katie Arrington with the Estero Village Council. It's been really great to have you both in here to just kind of scratch the surface on this subject. It's kind of a big one. Coming up on Gulf Coast Live, the eaglet has landed, or at least it's hatched. Southwest Florida's Eagle Cam has captured international attention as the world watches a pair of bald eagles nest and raise their family. We'll talk with the people behind the camera and a vet who helped the eagles and eaglets recover from injuries in the past. That's coming up in just a few minutes. Stay with us. This is Gulf Coast Live.